Today on Tim and Sid, the Leafs say hello to Morgan Rielly.
The Canucks shockingly say hello to Brock Besser.
And Raptor fans continue to say, I love this team, man. Love them. Tim and Sid, two lovable characters, live on TV and radio, starts now.
Maybe one.
Appreciate it.
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment. Yeah. It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Did I jump the gun there, McAllen? I thought you were talking about me with lovable. I may have jumped the gun on that. At times, I'm not that lovable.
I think if you polled the electorate, it would be even. Because I think a lot of people find you lovable.
I think more people love you than love me. I get hated. I get labeled easy on this show. I believe you are the more respected and loved individual. I may have more hair, but you are the more respected, the more loved.
I aim for more respected, but that doesn't mean more loved.
I don't know,
Tim. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
I look at the numbers, Sixero.
Really?
They love you, man. And they hate you.
Indifference is my poison. It's Tuesday, March the 10th. What up? I'm Sid Sixero. He's Tim McAuliffe. This is Tim and Sid live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Twitter, as always, best way to get a hold of us live in the moment during the show. At Tim and Sid is how you can do that. Our Instagram and Facebook accounts are also rather delicious.
Tim and Sid, the podcast, available wherever you get your podcast 24/7. If you'd like to stream the show, there's a Sportsnet app. You download that. Look for Sportsnet now. Got it good and since you understood. You can watch us live anywhere in Canada. And now with Rogers Ignite TV, you can do that too. Just go on the Rogers Ignite app. And you can PVR it, then watch it back. Did you know that?
Yeah, I got to tell you, the Ignite app, true story, the Rogers Ignite people couldn't do this for a while in this building, and the guy came up to me in the cafeteria constantly saying, we got to get you on Rogers Ignite. I'm like, can I watch my PVR from my phone anywhere, anytime?
You can.
Back then, no. Back then, he couldn't.
Right.
So I look at my guy, I go, listen, I'm going to call him Stu.
Right.
Don't remember his name. I go, listen, Stu.
Right, Stu.
Disco Stu doesn't advertise, and I need to be able to see my PVR stuff
right
on my phone.
Right.
Lo and behold, eventually, all the rights issues were figured out. Now I do it on the regular. And it's amazing. It's amazing. You can watch your entire PVR on your phone.
It is amazing.
It is amazing.
I use it all the time in everywhere in the house.
And I'm no shill. You know that, McCoy.
And I mean everywhere. And if we're all going to be spending a lot of time in the house, then maybe it's a good idea to go out there and get it. Coming up. Over the next 2 hours of what we hope is edutainment, we will discuss empty arenas.
It's coming.
The Raptors.
Emptying the tank.
The Oilers.
Running on empty.
Welcome back.
Brock Besser.
Welcome back.
Morgan Rielly.
That's right.
Leafs get Rielly back tonight just in time for their massive game against Tampa. I guess every game nowadays is massive. Chris Johnson of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet will join us next hour from Scotiabank Arena. You can hear that game live right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair will drop by from Dunedin. Jay's pitching continues to highlight this spring. Imagine that. Just 1 year after whatever the hell that
it's
was.
It's giving me the feels, McCoy.
Last year.
It's giving me the feels.
It's spring training. Relax.
Giving me the feels.
But spring training story. Jay's pitching. He and Stephen Brunt sat down with Mark Shapiro earlier today. We'll discuss with Jeff Blair, who will join us later. Also, Michael Grange will join us this hour to talk about a team that doesn't know the meaning of the word quit. And that is where we begin this show.
The Raptors are the aforementioned team. That was impressive. Despite losing reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Norman Powell, in less than 2 minutes last night, the Raptors still managed to win for the fourth time on that five-game roadie. They're coming home next game Saturday against Detroit. 27 points, both from Pascal Siakam and Serge Ibaka, were crucial in the victory, among other things. Tim, what did you learn last night while watching the Raptors win that game?
101-92. I'm going to need a couple seconds like the hoarders of the toilet paper couple of seconds. You know what I'm talking about?
I found some today, by the way.
Did you get some toilet paper?
I got lucky.
Good for you. So you got the ass we pay.
I'm all good. I'm right as rain this week. It's going to be a good week in the Sixero household.
So the 2 seconds that I took to talk to the hoarders of the toilet paper, I'm going to need here for this 101-92 victory, because it was on the road in Utah, second half of back-to-backs against a Utah team that had won 5 in a row. It's a big boy win that the Raptors – you know what? It's more than a big boy win. I have watched sports for 44 years. I've been in this business for 20 years now. You and I, Sid Sixero, have seen a lot of garbage. We have seen some of the greatest to ever play the game, right? MJ and Wayne, Braun and Mario, Kobe, dare I say, Mike Trout. Whoever you want to put into this mix, we have seen a great generation of players.
Aki Berg. Such a great player.
And I say this with all sincerity. This edition of the Raptors might be the toughest team I have ever seen in my life. I mean courageous. Absolutely never give up. Fight till there is no fight left. And even then, walk with confidence. I mean, seriously. A top four team in the Western Conference last night. They are healthy. You are not. You lost one of the best stories on your team 2 minutes into that game, just 5 games after he returned, the reigning and defending Eastern Conference Player of the Week, second half of back-to-backs on the road. Did I mention on the road, second half back-to-backs?
On the road, a.k.a. not at home.
Seriously, this is just ho-hum. I couldn't sleep last night. Closest thing I could come to thinking of something of what the Toronto Raptors are doing right now. 1993 Montreal Canadiens.
Oh, soccer to blue.
And their heart showing as they won 10 OT games. You threw me off with the soccer blue. Sacre bleu blanc.
Pardonnez-moi. Pardonnez-moi.
All right. 10 OT wins to win the cup. That's what that 93 team did. But they had Patrick Waugh. This Raptor team has had its core together. They've been healthy. Healthy this year, Sid Sixero, for all of 5 games. 5 games this year they have had their entire team together, and they are second in the East with 46 wins. And oh yeah, they lost the finals MVP and what, one of the top three, four, two players in the world? Kawhi Leonard?
I'd say top three.
All right. And yet they stand here. This might be the easiest team ever to root for.
Push through.
Did you ask for this?
No, it was suggested, but I didn't say no to it. Go ahead, continue.
It's because they embody everything you want from your team, top on down. I kind of like it. I'm enjoying it. I'm embracing it.
Go with it, bro. Preach on it.
From Masai Ujiri and where he came from, to Chris Boucher, and all points in between. Think about it. They've never stopped fighting. Not Masai, not Boucher, not from Saint-Hubert in Montreal to the NBA from North Philly's finest. Nuff said.
North Philly!
To a head coach that started 30 years ago in Derby of the illustrious and now defunct British Basketball League.
That team sucked, man.
From once fat Marc Gasol, just Pau's portly younger brother. Do you remember when he was fat?
I'm not going to throw stones.
To Toronto's son of the Congo, Serge Ibaka, youngest of 18 children, caught in war. That's real. You could cut Karina Burana for a second. Caught in war in his native land. Bring it back up.
That was a great cut.
My guy went to France.
What a cut.
My guy taught himself Spanish in Spain to follow his dream.
Si, senor.
And don't get me started on what OG went through last year. Yet, there they are again. Standing. Fighting. A 46 win. 46. That's one less than any of the glory year Vince Carter teams ever had. Imagine that. Up until 5 years ago, the gold standard for any Raptors team was the Vince Carter-led team. They had one more win than this ragtag group of undrafted free agents from the bottom of the first round finds, man, the top pick on this team, the top draft pick on this Raptors squad is Stanley Johnson. Stanley bleeping Johnson.
Who?
Stanley.
Who is it?
Bleeping Johnson. Loop. No Michael with Scotty.
Thank you.
No Bird to DJ.
No problem.
No Big Three. No Magic. Just Worthy, kids. Worthy because all they do is fight. And if you're not willing to fight, you don't play. Ask Stanley Bleepin' Johnson.
Who?
In fact, I could argue that they make all that fighting look too easy when actually it's the exact opposite, which is why I needed the full stop before the playoffs, before the madness comes, before the people lose track of what an absolute joy it is to watch this team go to work. And that's what this team does. They go to work each and every night. They go to work. Look around. It doesn't happen that much. Take it from Uncle Timpy. Appreciate it. Enjoy it because it does not come along all that often. I have no idea what any of this means in the playoffs. I just know that they'll fight. And all you need to do is take the time to look at this Raptors team to realize winning is always possible if you never stop fighting. Winning is always possible if you never stop fighting. What happened?
That's how you do it. That's how you debate. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim McCallum.
I wasn't planning on the Karina Burana part of that.
No, it was nice. It's a nice ad from everyone in the back. It was a nice ad. Nice job there. It was nice.
So they fight hard.
I think they're out in the second round. No, I'm kidding. I just wanted to add a negative that made no sense after that. You were clearly inspired watching that last night.
A
lot of us, I gotta say, Raptor fans out there watching or listening to this.
Is that just it, though? Is it just that they fight?
Here's what they do. They are so sure of their system. They are so sure of who they are. It doesn't matter who's out there because they're going to play the same way with the same work ethic, with the same defensive intensity most nights, with the same commitment to each other. Like, Tim, there was a couple nights ago in Sacramento, it looked like Kyle and Serge were kind of having a little go at each other. You know what? They forgot about it. Go win the game. Families fight. They do the same thing night in, night out. The league as a whole didn't see it coming before the season. I don't know how many people are seeing it right now. But Boston's fading in that East. The Raptors are securing second with each passing day. And I still think the NBA doesn't know what you and I have seen night in, night out. They don't know what's coming again, man.
And
they have no idea.
When you say systems, like, I feel like you're even diminishing it. Like, every one of those guys on this, I've been wondering for a while when I was going to use Stanley Johnson's the top draft pick on this team. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to. Listen, we saw it last year. I didn't know what it meant. And I finally figured out what it means. It means that every single person on this team, from Masai Ujiri, who had to pay his own way as an unpaid scout, to Chris Boucher from the kitchen of the Saint-Hubert, they all fight. Like, go through the entire lineup. They are all fighters. And I think it's, like, you can say, Norm, Fred, all of, like, Freddie didn't even get drafted. Bet on myself. Yeah, easy to say. Every team has draft pick after draft pick in the lottery. Every team that you watch every night is trying to do the same thing with better guys, quote unquote. And I think it's just that they have fighters. I think that's what I've come to the conclusion with.
Tim, the reaction to what you just did here on national television and on radio and podcast is coming in thick and fast at Tim and Sid. Mike at Tim and Sid. Well done, Tim. Michael at Tim and Sid. Et le premier étoile, Guy Lafleur.
What?
Just throwing in some French.
Okay.
Three Demon at Tim and Sid. McAuliffe is the motivational speaker I need while doing the most mundane things in my life. This man is epic. At Real Babcock tweets in, if the Leafs fought half as hard as the Raptors, I would still have my job. Fake Mike Babcock account. Should have figured that out before I read it.
I should get that one, yeah.
I don't know who this is. I think I've seen him outside the building panhandling. Paul Bromby tweeted in, LFG, in a picture of Tom Brady. What does LFG stand for?
Let's bleep and go.
Okay. Lindsay at Tim and Sid, I don't even like basketball, and I have goosebumps. I can't read that, but you know who you are. Hell of a rant on the Raptors, Tim.
You're just doing this because I feel like crap.
No, I'm not. I haven't had to do anything for the show yet, so let me at least do this. Now do the same for the Leafs with different music. Maybe next segment. Bills fan at birth, Tim and Sid.
I'll have to see Morgan Riley play first.
Yeah, that's Tim McAuliffe, people. Rack it up for best of the week. Game, set, match. I feel like that's a COVID-19 joke I don't want to make right now. Randy at Tim and Sid. Preach, brother, preach. And Tim, I think you're getting the message here. Steven at Tim and Sid. Tim is giving me goosebumps. That's about it.
Almost as many goosebumps as I got from the rousing national anthem before yesterday's game in Salt Lake City.
I want to thank you for pointing out what the national anthem singer was doing in Utah last night, because I had missed this. Reading the Canadian national anthem lyrics off of her left hand, literally.
The woman in question, whose name escapes me at this juncture in time, belted out the national anthem pretty well, too.
Yeah.
And read the lyrics off of her hand, and then a close-up revealed that there was writing in pen on her hand. Now, we are doing this a disservice by not playing the anthem, because she belted it out even though she was reading the words of the anthem that she was singing.
So you're saying she was good.
She was good!
That doesn't fit the narrative. I don't want to hear that. If you're going to write lyrics on a hand, I want it to be a hack job. I don't want it to be good.
Oh, you want it to be our boy.
I want to hear "Oh Canada" from 1994 at a CFL game in Las Vegas, Nevada, to the tune of "Oh Christmas Tree" from a guy who has no idea the melody for "Oh Canada."
I wrote his name down.
Good, because he doesn't deserve his name read, but McAuliffe's the accurate one here. Go ahead.
Dennis Casey Parks.
So just park it for a second and go down memory lane with us.
He should have written the melody and the lyrics on his hand.
July 1994. Hit it.
Oh, Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love.
Can you get it back?
In all thy sons' command.
He's in full O'Tannenbaum at this point.
With growing hearts we see.
He does have the lyrics there, though.
The
a lot of good it did him.
And strong and free. From far and wide,
this is where it comes
oh
together.
Canada, we stand on guard for thee. From far
what a crowd.
Wide, oh Canada,
the Las Vegas posse
we
of the CFL.
Stand on guard for thee. God keep
going.
Like, let it go.
Glory.
I've done nothing this entire segment. Let it go.
Oh, Canada, we stand on guard for thee.
It's after a thank you coming?
Just hold it. Maybe that'll make up for it.
You know, I thought the O.J. chase was the craziest thing I was going to see in the summer of 1994 until I heard that guy give that rendition. He fought. Did you hear about the follow-up, though, like 2 weeks later? He came back.
Yeah, no, he went to Hamilton.
He went to Hamilton.
Yeah. You know, he used to work for the Ticats.
Right? Oh, did he?
Yeah, he made good.
He sang O Canada again, but he sang it to, here's O Canada, here's O Canada, right down O Canada Lane. Here's O Canada, here's O Canada, right down O Canada Lane. Whoop! Nice mullet, too, jackass. Unbelievable.
He made up for it. He made good on it.
Oh, he made up for it.
Actually, if you read the story, the follow-up stories on it, like, he actually did all the things that you're supposed to do. And it, honestly, go read the stories.
Are you kidding me?
You know what?
I'll never forgive him for that
rendition. I'll get one to Matt Morgan. He says that he gets stopped all of the time to this day, and that he embraces it and enjoys the fact that he is Dennis Casey Parks, the guy who bleeped up O Canada that bad.
So if we pay it a certain amount to him, will he come in and sing it in that tone? Like, is that what he does? Does he still do that for coin once in a while as like a party joke?
No. I don't think he's like a laughing stock. Oh. Like, bring him in.
We'll agree to disagree on that.
No, I think he was a lounge singer in Vegas that they paid to bring in, and he knew he was in way over his head, so he tried to make up for it.
Oh, Canada, the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny country. Is there anything we should hit before we go?
Yeah, there was the whole OG Rudy Gobert thing.
Let's run that quick, guys.
We wasted time talking about Dennis Casey Parks.
No, let's do that.
Bucks lost again.
The Bucks didn't play anybody. Of course they were going to lose that game. They didn't play anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Bucks are like. Look, they're looking
They're in first place.
They're first place. 6.5 now in the Raptors.
I think when Giannis went down, they said, all right, let's rest Giannis. We're not getting 70 wins. Love, peace, and hair grease.
Like George Hill, Dante DiVincenzo, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Eric Blazer. Nobody played for the Bucks.
Michael Grange is going to join us later. Why don't we hold off on OG Anunoby, Rudy Gobert for that Michael Grange segment. We got some hockey coming up next, though.
Yeah, let's do it. We got returns in Toronto tonight. We got a return in Vancouver tonight with Brock Besser. And we have some news from arenas around the NHL that we feel like we need to pass your way. He's Tim McAuliffe. I'm Sid. Nice job on that, Tim, by the way. Nice job.
Fun.
It's fun. It's good.
This is Tim and Sid, coast to coast to coast, and Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590, the Fan in the Greater Toronto Area. I just saw a tweet from someone driving up the I-75 back to Windsor that enjoyed our first segment. So shout out to however you're listening, because the new world doesn't mean that you have to be in the local area.
Tim, the tweet's coming in off your Raptors soliloquy. It wasn't a rant. It was a soliloquy in the first part of the show. Still coming in. I'll drop this one on you, and then we'll move on, because there's way too many here to mention. Forget Drake. Tim McAuliffe should be the new Raptors ambassador after that. Killer gladiator of a speech. I don't know if the Raptors can afford Timmy. I gotta be honest.
Tell him, Sixero.
Can't afford him.
You make the number, all right?
And apparently our Mary Brown's chicken ad has been running in all regions of the country here. Matt at Tim and Sid just saw the Mary Brown's ad. Must have been Sid's idea, paid in free chicken fingers.
No.
Yes. Who's the winner there?
I thought it was Spicy Big Mary's.
Sorry, Spicy Big Mary's.
But you can't handle the heat.
We did that take like 30 times.
Hockey updates coming up on Besser, Riley, and McDavid. But first, Jets are back in a wild card position after a big win over the Coyotes last night. Winnipeg back from 2-0 down. 4 straight Winnipegger. Cody Eakin scored the game winner. First goal as a Jet. Connor Hellebuck, Vezina, made 36 saves for the victory. Meanwhile, Connor McDavid sitting on the sideline, sick. The Oilers lost 3-2 in overtime to the Golden Knights. For the second straight night, Shea Theodore scored a game winner against an Albertan team.
Where did this come from Shea Theodore? Like, that's crazy.
Did I say Shea Weber?
No, you said Shea Theodore.
I thought I may have said Shea Weber. I meant Shea Theodore. Whatever, I got it. What are you even stopping for? Vegas is now 3 points up on Edmonton.
Is that Shea Theodore or Bobby Orr? I can't tell. I got to clean my specs.
Or Shea Weber. Either one of them.
Shea Weber's pretty good, too.
Vegas is now 3 points up on Edmonton for first in the Pacific. All right. You want to go Winnipeg? You want to go Edmonton? You want to go positive? You want to go negative? Where would you like to go first on last night's stuff before we get to tonight's?
I'm going to go quickly Edmonton, really negative. First off, for Connor McDavid to miss that hockey game last night, we're talking first in the Pacific, man. Like, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was absolutely shocked he missed that hockey game last night, and he wasn't at practice today. Game time decision tomorrow night. Hopefully he's back soon. Also, getting outshot at one point 23-3, the Oilers did. Mikko Koskinen, back-to-back 45 save performances here. Here's what I'll say.
There is a mea culpa, by the way. You were saying the shots yesterday, and I sat here and said, sometimes shots don't mean everything. You can get out to last night, it meant everything. They were completely and utterly outplayed.
Completely outplayed. But here's what I love, right? This Oilers team, they haven't made the playoffs in 12 of 13 years. Looks like they're going to the playoffs. Draisaitl's having an MVP year. This Oilers fans should be really, really excited. Dave Tippett goes to that podium last night and destroys everybody.
Yeah.
Dave Tippett steps up and goes, you know what? You might be in second in the division. Congratulations to you. That was completely unacceptable what happened out there. That is not good enough. Clean your act up. And I love that message from Tippett last night. It wasn't hard to be upset watching his hockey team, I understand. But just considering all the good things happening with the Oilers, he's still the type of guy to go, get your act together. It's March, whatever it is. Playoffs are in a month. That's unacceptable. I love that from a head coach. Absolutely love it.
Minus 69 on shots on goal. We've got to be careful with that.
You know what I mean, baby.
Minus 69 on shots on goal over the last four games.
Wow.
That's not good.
I didn't realize that.
That's battling uphill, and I was the guy sitting here. The one thing that I'm surprised that you didn't stop on was Connor Hellebuyck.
He was excellent. He was excellent.
Is that a Vezina Trophy winning goaltender that we're seeing in Winnipeg if they make the playoffs?
I got to be honest with you. I have no idea who's going to win the Vezina this year.
Tuukka's put up some good numbers.
He has. Like, you could see Tuukka in the final three. Connor Hellebuyck has to be in the final three.
Let me throw this out there.
Vasilevsky's won a lot of games. I don't know. It's a weird year for Vezina.
Hellebuyck is 9-5-1 since the All-Star break in 15 starts, and he's had to play a lot because they're basically playing for their lives.
That's huge.
You know what his numbers are? Goals against 216, save percentage 933 in those 15 starts.
That's MVP-ish. And they're getting healthy, Tim. Adam Lowry coming back last night. Like, I know he's
fighting.
He's not a big minutes guy, but I love me some Adam Lowry, though. It's good to see him back. You can't deny those numbers, Tim. Like, if they get in the playoffs, there's one guy you look at first. Well, there's two guys. First guy's Paul Maurice.
Mm-hmm.
Second guy is Connor Hellebuyck. So I'm on the Jets bandwagon here. I'm hoping they get there. That'd be a hell of a story.
You might not be on the Jets bandwagon if you're in Western Canada right now. Jets go to the Oilers on Wednesday. They go to the Flames on Saturday, and they go to the Canucks on Sunday.
Interesting.
There
Sked.
Is going to be a lot of movement, as there always is, in the Pacific Division and in those wild cards as they go on this road trip to Western Canada, even though they're from Winnipeg.
Okay. Basically, Tim and I are coming in here every day, and we're just going to rehash who moved where in the Western Conference is how this is going to go, basically, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Okay.
By the way.
Go ahead.
The MacKinnon injury, before we move on, or do
big.
We add that
no.
to the...
Do it now. Do it now.
He's an MVP candidate, and he just got hurt, and we don't know what's wrong with him. They're already missing Mikko Rantanen, Nazem Kadri, Andre Burakovsky, Matt Calvert, Kale McCarr, and Philip Grubauer.
Look, this is it's how they look come that first round, right? Like, this is it's bad now, but the good thing for Colorado, they banked enough points. Even with some goaltending injuries on top of that, they banked points. They're in a good spot in the Central. They can get healthy. They can go on a little slump here and still be okay, I think, because Dallas isn't exactly tearing it up right now. So, but as a league, just as hockey fans, MacKinnon not in the league, not good. And we still have no real update on what his long-term status is.
Yeah.
And if we hear about it in the next 90 minutes or so, we'll pass it along to you. But
all right, let's talk long-term status here.
All right, big games for both the Leafs and Canucks tonight, and both teams will get a key player back from injury. Morgan Rielly returns. Hasn't played since January 12th. Brock Besser, he returns tonight for the Canucks. They host the New York Islanders. After the Panthers win last night, the Leafs are just a point up on Florida for third in the Atlantic. Meanwhile, the Jets win, as kind of Timmy alluded to, there's a lot happening in the West. The Jets' victory knocked Vancouver officially out of a playoff spot. They were not in a playoff spot when they woke up this morning. Tim, we have two high-profile Canadian hockey returns this evening.
Yeah.
Which one is a bit more surprising to you, Morgan Riley or Brock Besser?
I think most people would answer Brock Besser on this, even though some may be surprised that Morgan Riley is coming back. Here's the deal. On February 18th, the Canucks said that Besser was expected to miss 8 weeks. It's March 10th. He's back. February 18th, they said that he was expected to miss 8 weeks because of the injury. But if you remember the initial diagnosis on Besser, the Canucks said 3 weeks. They were going to reevaluate after 3 weeks. Guess how far away we are from February 18th?
About 3 weeks.
So Besser returned to Canucks skate over the weekend, and now he's being given the go-ahead, as if that weren't enough for Canucks fans to get a little excited. Markstrom skated today. Now, either there's a lot of fortuitous news in the lower mainland for the Vancouver Canucks, or it's all hands on deck, and that might be a nice way of putting it in Vancouver.
I hope they're not rushing him back. I have a lot of faith in doctors nowadays, Tim, for teams, more than I used to. But there is a part of me here. Morgan Riley was on pace for a while, right? They didn't make the move at the deadline to bring in a higher ticket guy because they knew Morgan Riley at some point in the regular season was going to come back.
Correct.
And when Morgan Riley spoke to the media yesterday, guys, a quick tip. Whenever an injured player is allowed to speak to the media ahead of a game, 99% of the time he is playing in the next game.
Right.
So Morgan Riley was always going to play tonight based on what we saw yesterday. But the Besser thing, you're talking about a kid who already is fairly injury prone, unfortunately, in his young career. I know these are desperate times for an organization that did spend some money this offseason, did bring in a Tyler Toffoli at a cost, do desperately want to make the postseason.
Say that again.
They want to make the post. Jim Benning kind of really wants to make the postseason.
Yeah.
I hope
Aquilini.
Besser is not being pressured to come back early. He's young enough where I'm sure he isn't. But I just hope that enough adults are in the room where everyone agrees this is the right decision for Brock, because we know he hasn't had a lot of luck with health, and we don't need this being his long-term story in the lower mainland. Hopefully he's not being rushed.
But you know,
hopefully,
Kevin Bieksa came on here and basically told us teams lie. Teams lie all the time.
Tim, I give teams the benefit of the doubt.
About injuries, and they may have overshot the Besser just to give him a little bit more time when the initial press release said 3 weeks.
I hear you. It's a good point. It's a good point.
Meanwhile, another game that affects all of that stuff in the West, Nashville is in Montreal tonight, and there might not be a dry eye in the building.
Right.
The Henri Richard ceremony will take place pregame in Montreal, and if we know anything about Montreal, they do those things well. As for the Leafs, 6-0, 11-9-3 without Morgan Riley in the lineup. Yesterday, you were telling me all about the power play. Can this move help that as they face the top-scoring team in the National Hockey League?
I don't know, because at practice yesterday, Riley was not on the top power play unit.
He was on power play unit number two.
He was correct. He was on power play unit number two, and Tyson Barrie was still there. Look, I was a little surprised to see that. I'm not gonna lie to you. Now, who knows what happens tonight? It's down to Sheldon Keefe and whatever he wants to do. But again, this is a team that in the last five games, just so we have the math correct here, 0-for-14 on the power play. It is one of the more shocking statistics I've seen with the Toronto Maple Leafs this season. And the fact that they're not throwing Morgan back on that first power play is interesting to me. But they are making changes technically, though. Marner going back with Tavares and Kapanen. There is some juggling going on this evening. If that power play doesn't snap out of it, though, to your point, if the power play doesn't snap out of it, they're in a lot of trouble. Because this was how the Leafs were going to combat, like, the rough style, right?
Yeah,
you come after
everybody.
The Leafs, you take down a Marner, you go in the corner, you commit a penalty on Nylander, that's where they make you pay. That's where they get you. We haven't really seen it.
It's so funny, though. You're saying that, and all I can think of is, one, the Leafs added a little sandpaper to their team at the deadline and maybe admitted that they probably needed a little more on this team moving forward. What has Tampa been doing the last couple of games? Trying to prove they're tough.
Fighting anything that moves.
Right? It started with Montreal. It started with Sergachev taking on Shea Weber.
Goon.
And then it followed up with that Boston matchup.
Yeah.
And I think that they think that they got beat up a little bit last year, and they needed the sandpaper too. It's so interesting to me to see these two teams, two of the more skilled teams in the National Hockey League, saying we need to play a different way. I don't know if that's a good thing at this point.
I think I know where Tampa's coming from here. Remember, like, let's all remember how last year ended. Losing four straight to Columbus as one of the most successful teams in the history of the regular season.
So goon it up?
I'm not saying goon it up.
I know.
Although the pictures that we're showing right now on television do lend to that.
I know.
I think they are trying to gear themselves up.
Yeah.
And show the rest of the league, and quite frankly, maybe even themselves psychologically, we're not going to get pushed over this postseason. Whether it's on the scoreboard or on the ice.
I think it might be the second.
We want to send a message to a lot of people. We're not going to get punked like that again.
Right.
We're not. That's the feeling I'm getting from Tampa, but I could be wrong. It's happened before.
By the way, I love all the hockey folks saying you don't disrespect Zdeno Chara like that. Let me just tell you something about Zdeno Chara, and he might be one of my favorite players in the National Hockey League because of the way he progressed. But he is a lion. And when the Lions slow down, there are guys out there that felt the wrath of the Lion over the years who are just waiting for an opportunity to exact some sort of revenge. So don't act like Zdeno Chara, who, again, I respect as a hockey player, has this some sort of level above everyone else where you can't do what Cicely did to him. You can, because he's done it to a ton of people.
Correct.
Because that's the game he's played. Sometimes when you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And I can't stand the hockey folk that are, you got to have respect. And yeah, the same kind of respect he showed you. There's a ton of guys that felt his wrath over the years that are just waiting for him to get to this advanced age where they might be able to get an upper hand on him. And I don't think they can.
Pacioretty almost had his career in.
Pacioretty's the easy one, but there's a bunch of guys.
Oh, in the corners? Oh, you lose track of what's going on in the corners with
Zdeno. And that's part of the reason why I love him, because he played with that fire.
Tim, before we go.
People love Pronger.
They love Pronger, and he has a lot of fire.
He had that too.
But he was also cheap, right?
Yep.
It's okay to call him cheap.
Yep.
Chelios was a little cheap.
Yep.
Char's a little cheap.
Yeah, you had to know where they were on the ice at all times.
Timmy, before we go in this segment here, let's There is some significant NHL arena news that we do have to kind of bring up regarding coronavirus. So last night, Santa Clara County officials, basically in San Jose, said gatherings over 1,000 people, they're now banned. Now, if you're at the SAP Center, they have a lot of things scheduled for the month of March, and the ban covers the month of March. The Sharks have 3 home games in March against the Canadiens, the Bruins, and what could be a big one with the Arizona Coyotes from a playoff standpoint, not just for the Coyotes, but for a lot of Canadian teams. The Sharks are still consulting with the NHL. They haven't made any hard decisions, but it sounds like they are leaning. We don't know this officially. They're leaning towards maybe playing those games either behind closed doors at the SAP Center or maybe going on the road, but nothing official there from Santa Clara.
I've heard through the grapevine that there are a couple of different options here. Plan to play in an empty arena. That they could play at a neutral site arena if there are places that they can go. They could play in the visitors building for those games if those are places they could go. And then the other one that they're talking about is postponing or rescheduling.
I think that's the last option for them.
Yeah, no, I think that would be it.
City officials in Philadelphia today also banned gatherings of 5,000 or more.
They're recommending,
sorry. Nothing from the Flyers yet on that. Also tell you the governor of Ohio has, forgive me, Tim, was that a ban in Ohio or is that a recommendation?
Ohio's governor, Mike DeVine, recommends indoor sports games be played without spectators. No response yet from the Blue Jackets, who are due to host Pittsburgh on Tuesday. Cavaliers are on the road until March 24th. But NCAA tournament first 4 games are in Dayton, which is in Ohio, for those who don't know, and first and second round regional slated for Cleveland.
Tim, quickly, the Columbus Blue Jackets did release a statement on this.
Mm-hmm.
They are aware of the recommendation from the governor of Ohio, but they will still have their game Thursday go on as scheduled with people showing up in the stands. So according to the National Hockey League and the people they're talking to, they're okay.
Right.
And the Columbus Blue Jackets, in an interesting move, said they're not only going to play Thursday, if you bought a ticket, come on down.
And a lot of people are trying to get ahead of things so that you're not chasing. And despite politics, history tells you that the cities that got ahead of it did better in things like this. So we got to be open to all of these things happening, as even LeBron James kind of walked back to his comments. So I think we're all kind of learning day by day. And one of the things that history has taught us is cities, states, provinces getting ahead of this and being cautious are way better than the ones that try and push it.
And the Austrian and German leagues today, who are basically bordering Italy,
canceled.
Those seasons are not being completed at all.
In hockey, yeah.
In hockey. Okay, we're going to take a break. Raptors take center stage once again after the timeout. Michael Grange will join us. He's Tim McAuliffe. I'm Sid Sixero. This is Tim and Sid. It's good to see you.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Still to come, CJ from Scotiabank Arena ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Tampa Lightning. Leafs now just 1 point up on the Florida Panthers for that playoff spot in the Atlantic Division.
In the meantime, let's talk Raptors. Let's talk a spectacular end to the road trip last night. There was a lot going on there. Michael Grange of Sportsnet joining us on the phone. Mike, I want to paraphrase one of your tweets from last night. Correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes I am wrong about these things. But did you say at one point this team never ceases to amaze me?
I did say that. I did say that right after I said and they won that game without Norm, the best player in the NBA, Norm Powell.
Tim, off the front of the show, laid it down pretty fairly eloquently about how amazing this team is and the resilience they have. Are we ever going to get shocked by their resilience, or should we, over the coming weeks, just come to grips with this in a less shocking way? Because I was in Tim's corner on this last night. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
I think shocked. Yeah, I guess we can't be shocked. And honestly, to me, it's a trademark of what we're going to end up calling the Kyle Lowry era, is just an ability to win games and a determination to win games when there's plenty of excuses not to. And there's all kinds of occasions. I mean, last night there was just a pure physiological argument, right? You're on the road, second night back-to-back. Everyone had played heavy minutes the night before. You're
against
at altitude in Utah. You're playing playing a really good team that's won five straight, who's had the night off. You know, every single box was checked in terms of why you lay down and just get home safely. And the Raptors just never seem to take those opportunities. And, you know, but I can see it, like I can think of a number of games over the past 7 years that sort of qualified. And I think we've just learned the constant over all those years has been Kyle Lowry. And I think this team, more than any other team, is really Kyle Lowry's. And I think when DeMar DeRozan was here, obviously they were excellent teams. And, but there was a bit of a shared ownership there. Last year was kind of a unique situation with Kawhi Leonard. But, you know, this is Kawhi. Kyle Lowry's absolutely driving the bus. And this is the result. I think you get a team that just plays, I won't say above a talent level, but just seems to achieve or exceed its potential every opportunity.
Here's what I was saying, Mike, and you might as well start with North Philly's finest, and there's a reason why they call it North Philly and not just Philly, because it's different. Are the Raptors just tougher than everybody else? Like, think of all of the guys on this team, top to bottom, and I went from Masai down to Chris Boucher, Freddie Van Vliet, Serge, his path to get to the NBA, Pascal Siakam's path. They're all seemingly just fighters. Are they just tougher than everybody else?
I think that's a great place to start.
they're obviously
Kyle
skilled.
Lowry
yeah.
is emblematic of everything. But, you know, there was a stat out there, you know, the Raptors have seven players that have scored 30 points this year.
Yeah.
And I think it's them and Philadelphia are the only teams that have done that. But if you kind of look at who scored the 7 points, the 30 points of those seven, and where they started their NBA careers from, Lowry's 24th, Serge Ibaka's 24th, Siakam 27th, Norm Powell 46th, I believe, Terrence Davis undrafted, Fred VanVleet undrafted, OG Anunoby 22. Like the aggregate, if you assign like a you know, 61 for the guys who went undrafted, like the aggregate draft position of your 7 30-point scorers is like in the 40s. And it's just stunning. And then you contrast that with Philadelphia, where it's a bunch of lottery picks and twos and threes. And, you know, I think that very much informs the DNA of this team, and we probably overlook it or don't give it enough attention. You know, they won an NBA title without a single lottery pick on their roster. I think the highest drafted player on this team is Stanley Johnson, who never plays. And it just, I think, you know, when you look at what it takes to fight your way into the NBA and into a rotation and then into an all-star status from, you know, when you don't have those kind of draft credentials, you know, it's a really, really, really tough road. And a lot of great players can never quite squeeze that opportunity at the right time. And a lot of players never get it. And so I think that's as good an explanation of any is when you look at what it takes to force your way into an NBA rotation when you're a second-round pick or undrafted or, you know, in Kyle's case, a guy who's been traded three times and was a late first-round pick. And, you know, we all know his story. It's I think it demands a certain mental toughness, and it creates it, too. And if you're not gonna if you don't have it, you won't last. And I think that's probably the primary attribute or adjective you would assign this team. I agree with you, Tim.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And I said that, I guess.
No, but I think you and I have both kind of said similar things over the course of this run, and that's why when I was bringing it up to you, I wanted to kind of clarify, because I think it's just, I mean, obviously there's skill, obviously there's a refinement of the skill, but just to have the intestinal fortitude to battle through everything that we know you have to battle through to get to that level, especially when you're picked where they are, I think they just might be tougher than everybody else. We got like 30 seconds left though, Michael, and I just want to ask you if you know when we'll know about Norm.
I presume we'll know something tomorrow in some shape or form, and I'm suspecting it's not going to be like really bad news. So, you know, fingers crossed, no one deserves it more. And you want to talk about mental toughness and a guy, you know, who represents everything this team stands for, you know, persistence. Yeah. You know, Norm Powell is one persistent dude. And you just hope he doesn't get derailed by this little setback.
Well, someone who didn't like the Grievous Vasquez trade as a voodoo doll here in Milwaukee, and I just hope they put it down, because he's playing too well to have this keep happening, and hopefully that's the only negative from last night, really, and hopefully he can be okay. Mr. Grange, always a pleasure, sir. Have a good day. Thank you.
You too, guys.
It is a damn shame.
Crazy, man.
Let's just hope that he's okay, and then maybe,
but you know,
five
what?
Times all year. Like, it's amazing. It we saw the board again on the TV side of things.
Nuts.
Five times this year they have had a healthy lineup.
But it happened in the most Raptor way. Like, OG was coming over to help. Like, they were playing good team basketball, right?
Yeah,
of course Norm's going to get hurt when they're playing good team basketball.
Yeah.
But of course with Norm and Powell.
All right, time for a break. When we come back, the Toronto Maple Leafs are getting a little healthier as well.
Yep.
Morgan Rielly back in the lineup. Chris Johnson back on the show next. You're on Tim and Sid.
Time for Tim and Sid. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Back here for another half hour on Sportsnet and a full hour on Sportsnet 360 and 590 The Fan. Chris Johnson will join us from Scotiabank Arena in moments as the Leafs get set for a massive hockey game tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning. 13 games to go for the Leafs, 1 point up on the Panthers for third in the Atlantic Division. Oh, doctor.
At least do get a boost tonight. Morgan Rielly returns after missing 23 games with a broken foot. Here are Sheldon Keefe first and Morgan Rielly on jumping back into the middle of a playoff race.
It's going to take a little bit of time to get back up to speed. And, you know, especially this time of year when teams are preparing for playoffs, you know, the game picks up a little bit. But, you know, I think it's important that, I mean, just go in there and just work hard and try to just be yourself.
He's had a lot of practices and he's excited to get back, and The on-ice contributions, I think, will be there and should be obvious. But it brings a lot to our group, particularly this time of the year, where we could get a little boost of his energy and his passion, his experience, all those types of things will serve us well.
The Canucks also get a big boost tonight, and it's rather unexpected. Brock Besser returns against the Islanders. Besser suffered a fractured rib back on February 18th and was expected to miss 8 weeks or so. He missed just over three.
I don't think I'd put myself in the position if I wasn't ready. So I feel ready enough, but you know, obviously, I'm going to be taking shorter shifts tonight.
That is a huge boost. A lot of Canuck fans happy and wish the young man well.
That's shorter shifts can be good too.
I live by that motto. Short shifts are great. Chris Johnson never takes a short shift. He is joining us live from Scotiabank Arena ahead of the Leafs and Tampa Bay Lightning. And you can listen to it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan tonight. CJ, it's great to see you. Morgan Rielly returning both on and off the ice. What does this do for the club?
Well, I think it's a huge boost for them, Sid. It's, you know, I'm getting feedback. Sorry.
Oh, a little too much. You can keep going, though.
Okay, but it's a big boost for the Leafs, obviously. Can you...
It's too much? Yeah, we'll fix it. We'll get you back. No problem.
Sorry, CJ. Apologies for the technical difficulties.
I was going to say just pull it out and continue, but obviously he got something really loud in his ear, which can happen every once in a while in this business. We all wear these little earpieces that go right into our ear, and every once in a while...
Yours is way cleaner than mine.
You get one. It's a newer one.
Hello?
Check, I also check, keep things...
Check. Oh, check. We hear you, CJ. You hear us? Checking.
So every once in a while, you'll get it'll just go really loud in your ear. And it can be off-putting, to say the least. And one of these times, when I was covering a Super Bowl in Jacksonville, it got stuck in my ear.
You physically lost it in your ear. Yeah, I was watching the live feed that day. James Ladd,
Yeah, you got needle-nose pliers and pulled it out of my ear. It was literally lodged inside my ear.
I was watching in what later became the closed captioning room, that feed of you in Jacksonville. For the score people in the building, that's just for you. Take two on Chris Johnston from Scotiabank Arena. CJ, is everything all right?
Yeah, that's just nightmare fuel when that happens. Yeah. So that's the worst.
You handle it like a pro. Apologies to you and the audience watching.
I tried to explain what happens, but there's no explaining that.
Unless you've been in that seat, it's tough to know exactly how that feels. And, CJ, you handled it well. Sorry about that. Let's get back to the question. Morgan Rielly again, on the ice, off the ice. How much of a positive is this for a team coming off a bizarre three-gamer in California?
Well, weirdly enough, I almost think it's more important off the ice for the Leafs to get Morgan Rielly back. I mean, to me, this group is in need of something, some kind of spark to get them going. And I just think Morgan's such an important part of the leadership of the group. He's obviously a very good player for them. And he's been gone for quite some time, 23 games with this broken foot. So it's been a long while playing on without him. And I do think that getting him back for a big game, getting back here on home ice, that this is a lot of positives for the Leafs because... Yo, you're right. California was totally bizarre. They only allowed two goals in those last two games in LA and Anaheim, and they got one out of four possible points there, and they really missed out on an opportunity to keep a big lead on Florida Panthers in the playoff race.
Sid told me why the power play was bad yesterday. Can it improve with Morgan Rielly in the lineup?
I think it can, although I do believe he'll start on a second power play unit, which doesn't get much work for the Leafs. But we've seen them experimenting a little, having Mitch Marner back up high in practice. And so I think you're going to see perhaps a little bit more movement from the team on the power play, which should help. I think they feel it's growing a bit stagnant with the way they do things, that it's a bit predictable. And obviously teams spend a lot of time scouting the specialty teams and have a good feeling of what the Leafs are trying to do. So I think that they're going to, you know, change up how they're going about business on that unit, because, you know, that could have been the difference between maybe getting a couple more points out in California in those tight games.
Chris Johnson from Sportsnet live from Scotiabank Arena ahead of Tampa Bay and the Leafs tonight. Chris, at the media avails this morning, and obviously they were outside of the dressing room in the new world we live in here. It was press conference form. How many guys watched that Panthers-Blues game on Sportsnet last night? Are they there, or are they just kind of focusing in on what they need to do?
I don't know if they're watching those games, but I think they're certainly aware of where they stand right now. And you know, a couple of them did mention feeling as though it was a bit of a missed opportunity in California. You know, they had a 5-point lead on Florida when they started that trip. They were in each of those games, you know, tied after two periods in San Jose, getting to overtime in a shootout against LA and getting within one in Anaheim. And they felt that they could have really kind of put the pedal down, and instead they've gone in reverse here. And so I think they're very acutely aware of how close this race is. There's still one more game coming up head-to-head with the Panthers. And the reality is this is probably going to go right down to the end of the season before it's decided.
The bad news is that the Leafs are facing the top-scoring team in the league. The good news is that they've played well defensively of late. Or is it just more bad news because they also haven't scored while playing well defensively?
Well, there's a lot of bad news lately. It's been up and down. I think the one good thing in this game is that they played well in Tampa 2 weeks ago. That was one of their better recent victories that they've put together. Complete effort. You know, a lot of different guys going. Wasn't just one line that was clicking offensively. And I think that they have a certain confidence that they can have success against the Lightning. I mean, obviously Tampa is a very good team, but you know, I think that they're built in similar fashion. The Leafs probably aren't as intimidated by Tampa's offense as a lot of other teams might be, just because they feel as though they can go head-to-head with that and play a 5-4 game if that's what the circumstances dictate in this one. So I think it's a good game for the Leafs because no one has to tell them how big it is. No one has to explain how dangerous the opponent is, and it is an opponent they have had some recent success against.
CJ, one of the stranger quotes, maybe not strange, but one of the more unexpected quotes from that road trip for the Leafs to me was Mitch Marner after the Anaheim loss Friday night talking about staying off social media, just kind of not going there, not needing to read that stuff. How much of an effect, especially for a younger team like this, how much of an effect do you think social media is having on this group?
Well, I don't think we can overestimate it, because to me, social media is where all the bad stuff happens. Even just in my small corner of the universe, if there's going to be hate, it tends to be on Twitter or people calling you names and what have you. Now, I'm a little older and I'm not nearly as much in the public eye as these guys are. So I do think it's tough. And you know, I think for Mitch Marner especially, this has been a tough year. You know, that contract, long negotiation he had with the Leafs through the summer and into the start of training camp, you know, I think that took a toll on him. Obviously, he took some criticism there. You know, now that he's making the salary that he's making, I think he's a little bit more in the spotlight in terms of taking some heat from fans especially. You know, I haven't seen the traditional media really take a run at him. But, you know, I also haven't scrolled through his Instagram feed and seen what everyone's saying there. So, you know, I think that there was a pretty telling quote, actually, from Mitch Marner. He wasn't prompted about that. It was just a question about the game. And he was mentioning kind of the need to just circle the wagons and get – you know, inside the team environment, not worried about everything being said outside those doors. And, you know, I do think it's a significant thing for these guys to deal with, especially when times are tough.
Chris Johnson joining us from Scotiabank Arena here on Tim and Sid. Both Sid and I have been very cautious about attempting to give coronavirus updates, just kind of passing along the facts. So I don't want to put you in a tough spot, but we're walking down roads in many states in the U.S. right now. What's the latest that you're hearing about a contingency plan, or if we might end up, you know, playing behind closed doors or maybe even missing games?
Well, all of those contingencies have been discussed by the NHL, and, you know, I think that they've looked at potentially having neutral site games. If, for example, a team like the San Jose Sharks, where there's an issue in Santa Clara County where they play, maybe you have to play some games somewhere else other than San Jose. They've looked at the possibility of postponing the schedule a little bit and pushing games back later into April, and they've gotten available building dates from each team to do that. And they've also talked about potentially playing in empty arenas. And you know, when I look at what's happening more broadly, guys, I just don't know how much longer we could continue having events like this with, you know, 20,000 people being Scotiabank Arena here behind me tonight for this game, just because of, you know, what the governments have said in a lot of places. You know, you had the governor of Ohio today say he doesn't want to see sporting events more than 5,000 people. There's a health official in Philadelphia today who gave that same fact for Philadelphia. And so, you know, I think that there's going to be a certain pressure on the league at some point, especially if the number of coronavirus cases continue increasing at the rate they have, where, you know, it's going to be tough for the league to keep playing games. Obviously, it's a priority for them to try to do it with fans, but certainly they've mentally gone down the road of what does this look like, how do we do this, and I do think they're prepared to go to those levels, including having games in empty arenas, if that's what the circumstances dictate.
And CJ, again, the only county in the NHL or the only state or province that has gone down this road was Santa Clara County last night, prohibiting gatherings of 1,000 people or more. Everything else, like you said, like Tim said, was a recommendation. My question to you is, how many more cities or counties do you think need to jump on this before it turns into something Gary Bettman cannot not act on? Like, at what point does the schedule get so disrupted? How many more locations have to get involved before it becomes a real, real scheduling nightmare?
I wish I had the answer for that. You know, I really don't. I mean, this is such uncharted waters that, you know, I don't really know what this looks like. And you know, we've seen other leagues canceling their playoffs, you know, in Germany and Austria today. Switzerland has delayed the start of its playoffs. Norway, you got the Indian Wells Tennis Tournament, the Women's World Hockey Championship. You know, the NHL doesn't exist outside of the bubble. This, you know, this is part of it. And I would guess, much like we saw yesterday when they formally announced that reporters would be kept out of the dressing room in conjunction with the other sports leagues, including the NBA, I would think that whatever happens will be done with the NBA and the NHL making the same decisions at the same times. And so, you know, as long as it's they're getting recommendations from health officials that it's safe to play in these places, I think they're going to want to obviously get the games in and try to keep the things going. But you know, if it gets to that level where they're empty arenas, you know, I would expect something in conjunction with the NBA. I think that the leagues will try to walk down this path together.
Solid insight as always. Chris Johnson of Sportsnet live from Scotiabank Arena, site of the Tampa Bay Lightning and Leafs tonight. CJ, we love you. Thanks, man.
Love you too. Sorry about that hiccup off the start.
No problem.
Not your fault. What are you, Jack Campbell? Don't take responsibility for everything. So it wasn't your fault.
I'm the Jack Campbell of this show.
Thanks, brother. As always, you are saving us, so to speak. Chris Johnson at Scotiabank Arena.
Thank he's got to shave off the rest of the goatee.
Yeah, he's got to go the way of... Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Scotiabank Arena and MLSE have issued public health reminders, and this is the same going on in and around North America right now. One of them is stay home when you are ill and all of the normal things that you would have to deal with, and that they and you should stay informed with information changing quickly. Check through updates through Toronto Public Health in this area, Public Health Agency of Canada for cross country.
I also noticed this, Tim, from a local CBS a news anchor named Ryan Bass in the Tampa area. And he just tweeted, City of Tampa, along with Mayor of Tampa, Jane Castor, will meet Thursday of this week to discuss canceling or postponing major events due to coronavirus. Obviously, you got the Tampa Bay Lightning and Toronto tonight. Mm-hmm. That's a team that would be affected. WrestleMania is in Tampa this year,
right,
on April the 5th. It is one of the bigger events, period, in North America, year in and year out. Something to keep in mind as well that just kind of crossed our desk here.
Yeah, Rob just tweeted it and said the exact same thing. There'll be 90K in Tampa.
Wow. Tim, one thing about the media room changes or the media availability changes with sports that we saw yesterday. We just went off the air when that joint statement came out from MLS and NHL and NBA.
For those who don't know, suggesting that they would bring in players to a common area where the players would be able to stand at a podium in some cases, and probably should be in most cases or all cases, but stand at a podium and talk to the media.
And listen, you and I are in the media. I will always defend the media's rights, quite frankly, to speak to these guys in a more private setting. Listen, not everything is gold, but sometimes you get some great stories. Sometimes you get some great insight. And I always support that. But the one thing I thought of today, from a scheduling standpoint, like if an athlete were to contract coronavirus, that team is shut down. The athlete is shut down for X amount of time. Anyone who's come in contact with him is those teams are like family, man. You have to literally quarantine everyone around him, coach, player, athletic therapist, regardless of who it is. So as much as I thought that was a reach the first time I read it, the more I think about it, if that happens to one athlete, you almost have to shut down a league with all the dominoes that have to fall.
I think that's the idea of getting in front of it.
Absolutely.
Is you might end up with that situation regardless of what you do. And then how do you deal with that? And that's what we're all talking about, I think. Probably a little too much for my liking right now, but that's what we're all talking about right now are those very things each and every day.
Forgive me, Tim, because I don't want to hot take this in any way, shape, or form, but I thought that was a point that wasn't being made enough, is if an athlete does
contract... I thought it was insinuated, though.
It was insinuated, but I wanted to say it.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people who are angry that this availability is gone. Some people don't care. But there's a lot of people angry, and I support everyone's rights to do that. But just think about what would happen if.
Right.
And then it's all moot. Then you and I are out here doing a different show, man.
Right. I think that's why those conversations are taking place with the respected science officials and the league so that they can get out ahead of those very things.
Good point, Tim. Good point.
All right, time for a break. When we come back, listen, we're going to continue on Dunedin. Jeff Blair will join us. We got a lot still to come on this edition of Tim and Sid.
90,000 for WrestleMania. 90,000.
Welcome back to Tim and Sid, live coast to coast on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jason wrote in the middle of the show, and Sid always says this, always emphasizes one of the very few, if not the only shows, where you can write in during the middle of the show and get a response. We said we were going to talk OG and Rudy with Michael Grange. We didn't get to OG and Rudy with Michael Grange, so Jason told us, didn't talk OG Rudy with Grange.
Thanks for the reminder.
Do you want to talk OG Rudy without Grange?
Yeah, let's talk about that punk Rudy Gobert.
The punk?
Let's talk about that.
Rudy
if he
Gobert.
Was here, I'd say the same thing to his face, Tim. To his face.
I have a rule about that, by the way.
I have the complete opposite rule. By the way, Rudy Gobert started this in literally the other end of the court. Now, did OG Anunoby maybe throw an elbow-ish in midcourt on Rudy Gobert? Possibly. But give me a break. All right? Rudy Gobert should be able to handle his own business. Rudy Gobert should be able to take care of things by himself. And I love that OG Anunoby, at the end of a road trip, Timothy McAuliffe, end of a long, arduous journey, still had it in his mind to say, not right now, big shot. Not right now, Johnny, I'll cry when I don't win Defensive Player of the Year. Not right now, the also-rans of the second tier of the Western Conference playoff situation.
It's okay for grown men to cry. I'm okay with grown men.
Not when it comes to the Defensive Player of the Year, it isn't. Lots of other things, yes. Suck it up, Buttercup, on that one. The point is this. OG Anunoby didn't start it, but he finished it. And I loved every
there
second.
There was no finish of anything. And for those who missed it, Rudy stared him down.
Stared him down.
Rudy Gobert and OG Anunoby, a little pushing and shoving. OG throws an elbow at this, 7 foot one dude?
He's a large man, Rudy Gobert.
He's a really big dude. He throws an elbow near midcourt that swings and misses. Gobert goes back at him. And there's a little ole, and then there's some staring and a shoving, and both of them got ejected. It was ridiculous from start to finish, and the fact that NBA referees now throw you out for whatever the hell that was last night is jaw-dropping to me. I understand it. I'm still shocked by it.
That's still technically a fight in the NBA, Tim.
Do you remember what used to happen in the NBA?
It's been such a long time.
Do you remember the bad boys of the NBA? Do you remember when the Lakers and the Celtics would go toe-to-toe and people would just get clotheslined and then they would talk about maybe it being more than just a foul? Like, where was the flagrant when Bill Laimbeer was on the court? Where were the flagrants when Isaiah Thomas was trying to intimidate dudes and then getting it back? Where was all of that? Because I don't think kids remember any of that.
For those listening on pod or radio, Tim is running a montage of basically physical assaults taking place on NBA courts back in the 80s, and it is spectacular. Like, this was real. This was how it played out. None of that pushing and shoving last night.
I'm
Rudy Gobert.
I'm just saying none of these guys got tossed for any of the things that we're seeing. And those guys played a little ole and missed an elbow.
It's such a great point.
And they got tossed out of the game for it. I just think that eventually we've got to realize that sometimes grown men playing sports will get in each other's face. And it's not always terrible.
It's good. Sometimes it's healthy.
And if you miss, and if you're a basketball player and you miss, I don't even think do you think OG Anunoby thought, I'm going to elbow him in the face?
No.
And then missed it?
He reacted. He just naturally reacted. Tim, before we wrap this up, I want to get this in. Marc Gasol returned Sunday night. Pascal Siakam in the tunnel in Sacramento reacted to him in a rather unusual way. Did you hear this?
Yeah, I did.
Let's play this for those who missed it. Listen carefully.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, let's play a game, Tim, quickly. Shakira from the halftime show or Pascal Siakam? Run it. Which one is which?
Hey, man, I've been to Persian weddings. I've heard that a lot. All right, time for a break. Here's what's coming up on Sportsnet tonight. Hockey Central next on Sportsnet, followed by the Bruins and Flyers. Later, it's the Isles and the Canucks regionally on Sportsnet Pacific. Sportsnet 1 is an NBA doubleheader, Mavs, Spurs, followed by the Clippers and Warriors. As for us, we'll back with Jeff Blair from Dunedin as we continue on Sportsnet 360 and 590 The Fan in just 60 seconds.
Welcome back to Tim and Sid. Down at spring training, the Jays got another positive start from a starting pitcher today. It's kind of a theme now.
Mm-hmm.
Tanner Roark, 4 innings, gave up 1 run, struck out 4 against the Yankees. Shun Yamaguchi followed up, 3 innings, only gave up 1 run. Meanwhile, your boy, Tim, Santiago Espinal, homered in a 4-2 win. Gerrit Cole started for the Yanks. He was pretty good, too. Gave up just an earned run in 3 1/3 innings of work. Jeff Blair is currently down in Dunedin as Writer's Block are doing shows live from Florida. Stephen Brunt and Mr. Blair. Mr. Blair is joining us right now. Jeff, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Doing real well.
Before we get to the Mark Shapiro interview you did today, which I'm curious about, I do want to ask you if you are getting as riled up about the starting pitching as, say, me. I am now much more bullish on this Jays season, having watched games that are completely irrelevant. Why am I wrong?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm getting riled up necessarily, but I will say this. I really do believe that, barring injury, the Jays are going to get a professional start every night this year. And that wasn't often the case last year. And you know what really has got me kind of excited was watching Hyunjin Ryu the other day and just talking to guys around the team, talking to other pitchers about how he goes about doing what he does. And, you know, we did an interview with Nate Pearson today. And I said, okay, you got Nate Pearson who wants to throw 110 and Hyunjin Ryu who, you know, couldn't throw 110 in his dreams, and just the difference between the two, you know, the two pitchers, those two types of pitchers. And it's interesting how Pearson was talking about how he is sort of taking note of Ryu's routine, and Pearson's a routine oriented guy, so it was kind of interesting hearing a guy who's a routine oriented guy on the way to throwing 100 and 110 and how he sees something in this kind of crafty bigger sized pitcher who doesn't throw anywhere near as hard as him, but he's seeing things he can take from it. So I feel optimistic about the fact they're going to get a professional outing from their starting pitcher every night. And the question now is, can they hit? Because I got to tell you, the bottom of this order is brutal.
It was funny because I got excited about
guys. I cannot put it any other way. It is brutal.
I got excited about the lineup on Monday, and when the lineup card came out, you saw the top of the lineup card, and you're like, "Oh, they're the big boys, the kids getting." And then you saw the bottom, and you're just like, "Wait a second, is that the starting lineup, or is that just what they're throwing out there?"
Yeah.
And then you start trying to see the permutations of what it is, and it doesn't look good anyway, which way you rub it.
No, look, and I think I'll give Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins credit in that they know that this team is still an impact player away from being good. Like, when this team is ready to win a playoff spot, let alone win a playoff game, I guarantee you right now, 150%, it ain't going to be with an outfield of Gurriel, Grichuk, and Teoscar Hernandez. This is not going to be. There will be at some point, whether it's this year in the offseason, a big impact bat capable of playing good defense in the outfield.
You mentioned Shapiro and Atkins. Shapiro was on the writer's block earlier today with yourself and Stephen Brunt. And Twitter kind of lit up about extensions to the young players. Was that the thing that most stood out to you, or would you like to go somewhere else on that?
No, I think that was, look, it's an important point, and here's the thing. Every team in baseball right now is doing that, and that goes back to the Cleveland Indians when Mark Shapiro was part of the front office. They were kind of the first team to extend their own guys, buy out years of arbitration, buy out a couple of years of free agency, and, you know, essentially, it's a trade-off. You say to the player, yeah, there's a risk that you may not be making as much money at the end of your contract as you could be if you're a free agent. But on the other hand, you're going to make more right in your early years. You're going to make more when you're younger than you otherwise would have. You see Tampa Bay do it as well. And, I mean, that's the way smart teams go about doing their business. Now, the problem with the Jays situation right now is their two big players, like their two key core guys, are Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They're both sons of major leaguers. You know, unlike the guys the Braves are extending, these guys come from money. Yeah, these kids aren't hurting for coin. The parents aren't hurting for coin. So it's going to be difficult. You're going to have to make a very shrewd offer to these guys in order to give both sides value. And I think the other question here is, you look at Vladdy, you look at Bo. Let me ask you, which of those two players do you think is going to have the same body 5 years down the road? And So I think for the Jays, there's a bunch of things going in here, but I really do believe that there have been at least back-channel talks. Now, have they had back-channel talks to the point where, hey, would your guy sign for this number of years at this much money? I don't know if it's gone that far, but I think my sense from what Mark said is at least it's been entertained, and, you know, it's gone simply beyond him and Ross sitting in the office and scribbling on paper and saying, what do you think if we do this?
Jeff Blair joining us here on Tim and Sid. Jeff, as you know, having been in the Toronto market a long time, and Tim and I know, a lot of Jays fans are also Leaf fans, and a lot of Leaf fans are also Jays fans. There's a lot of love going around there. Do you think the Toronto sports fan, looking at what the Leafs have done so far in this Dubas experiment, are really that hungry to lock down their young players at this stage? Do you think what's happened with the Leafs has led to the fan base going, you know what? You can wait on the kids. You can wait on the contracts. Kind of like Missouri, like a little show me here. Do you think one affects the other?
Right. I mean, it shouldn't, because they're two different sports. And, you know, I would argue that when you, I mean, I guess people have an issue with Auston Matthews' contract. I don't know. Dude's going to score 50 goals. And, you know, the long-term contract I have an issue with the Leafs is John Tavares, because he's effectively been their second-line center. And all I keep hearing is how there's a leadership issue in that team. Well, you've got John Tavares signed up to supposedly provide that leadership. So, no, I don't think so. It's a different game, and I think that baseball fans, Blue Jays fans in particular, are smart enough to realize what they have in Bo and what they have in Vladdy. So I think that the things are a little different. I would think, you know, I'll bounce it back to you guys. Anybody complaining about Pascal's contract? I don't know.
Nobody.
Or Norm Powell's contract. I mean, initially that
Or Norm Powell's contract.
Yeah,
not now they're not.
Good. No, it didn't look good early, and now starting to come around, although he does have a player option for the final year. That'll be interesting. It's funny, you're bringing up all the fan favorites, and it's Jeff Blair joining us from Dunedin for the uninitiated. Is Matt Shoemaker going to be a fan favorite by the time the Jays make it up to Toronto?
I mean, if he's healthy, he's going to be one of their most consistent starting pitchers. So, you know, in that regard, yeah. But
just,
you know,
seems
it's
easy
hard
to root
not to
for.
Cheer for the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a guy. Look at his injuries. It's a guy who hurt his leg. It wasn't an arm injury. Got hit by a line drive. Yeah. And he's a guy who's really open about how much he wants to stay in Toronto and how much he likes the city and how much he wants to be a leader. I mean, absolutely, I can see him a guy the folks in Toronto will fall in love with. And I'll tell you what, if he pitches the way he did, the way I saw him, and once people in Toronto get to know him a little bit, they're going to love Ryu as well. Because, right, you know, his walkout music is Korean Monster. It's a great tune. He's got a really quiet sense of humor. I've seen a couple of instances where guys will walk by him and he'll kind of reach out and grab their pocket and all that. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to walk around with a lampshade in his head, but he is a guy who is absolutely comfortable mixing and mingling with the rest of his teammates. I think he is going to be hugely popular in this city.
So just like Marcus Stroman.
Yeah. No, I think...
Don't comment further if you don't want to. He's blocking me, too.
He is... He's going to be the ace, right? And until Nate Pearson comes up, he's going to be the guy. Now, I got to tell you, when Nate Pearson comes up, then we'll have a discussion about who the most popular Blue Jay is, because we've never seen a guy like this in this organization. We've never seen a homegrown guy who can come up and throw that hard and has been as hyped. Like, I remember Carpenter, Escobar, and Halliday, they were great. Nowhere near the hype that this kid has. Sanchez, hey, he was good. Nowhere near the hype of this kid. Same thing with Stroman. This kid is going to, he might be the rare pitcher that puts people in the stands in Toronto, because that hasn't always happened. Roger Clemens had great years in Toronto. Didn't have much of an impact in attendance. I'm telling you, man, this kid, if he starts throwing 103 and 104 regularly, folks will come out to watch him pitch.
Yeah, for a starting... I mean, so then... Because I've been cautious, and I'm always cautious with young players. Sid knows this, and it's just because I've seen so many guys get hyped, and so many people think that you can name the guy. The Kevin Mosses of the world are going to be the superstars. And sometimes you got to develop them. Mm-hmm. That's half the battle, is making sure they develop. So when you watch Nate Pearson work, how much tinkering, how much developing still needs to happen?
You know, I've got to tell you, I've seen him throw only. I haven't seen him throw live. I've seen video of him. I've talked to a couple of friends of mine who are scouts. One guy in particular, I said, give me the most impressive thing you've seen this spring training. He said, well, I saw Nate Pearson throw, and I saw Tyler Glasnow throw 101 and follow it up with a 93-mile-an-hour change. He said, these two guys are alike. And the other thing this guy said, and this guy's been around for a long time, this scout, said, the other thing about Pearson is, he said, I kind of thought that his mechanics were... You know, the knock against him was there were some mechanical issues, that it was kind of a bit out of whack. But he said, when you see him in person and you really watch what he's doing, you don't get that sense. This is a guy who understands his body. He understands what he's doing. So, you know, that's why I'd probably be a little less cautious going all in this guy. I really would.
Jeff Blair is a member of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in the writer's wing. His opinion matters to Tim and I. So I'm gonna put it right in front of you, Jeff. You said when he comes up. When do you think Nate Pearson comes up?
I think if the Jays are still in the playoff picture in early June, maybe you see him up. I don't think it's not going to have anything to do with service time or anything like that. I think it's going to depend where this team is. You will see him up in the summer. But to me, if around the first week of June, this team is kind of, you know, teetering on the brink of being in it, they may bring him up and let him go.
Before we let you go, it's been sprinkled throughout the show because of the various updates that we have had and the people that we've talked to. But what's the feeling in and around where you are about the coronavirus and COVID-19 and what the next move will be?
Well, I mean, people are being really cautious, but as I had someone tell me today, you know, it appears that stuff that's happening in Europe is a week to 10 days ahead of what's happening in North America. So if you notice what's going on in Europe with the Champions League matches being being played behind closed doors, cancellation of tournaments. You know, we know that the governor of Ohio today has essentially asked that there are no sports events played. I think most people here think that there will be a time where you are going to see games played behind closed doors. I wouldn't say it's inevitable, and who knows? Again, it's a fluid situation. But if you operate under the assumption that there's kind of a 7-day to 10-day lag between what goes on in Europe and what's going on here, you know, do the math.
Right.
He is Jeff Blair, the host of Writer's Block, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern every day here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Jeffy, a longtime friend of the show. Great stuff. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, man. Say hi to Steven for us.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Absolutely. Take care, Tim, Sid.
All right, there is one of our friends, Jeff Blair, down in Dunedin. And I got a tweet that's kind of going viral right now. And I want to bring it up because sometimes in these situations where you see something that you've never seen before, and you and I sit here and we feel like we've never seen anything like we're seeing with coronavirus, you need someone with some experience to talk to you, to allow you to see from their eyes many of the things that they have experienced before. So this tweet is from a Taylor C, and it's a video, and it says the coronavirus has crossed the lines for Italians. And what you have in the picture and the video is what appears to be, and Sid, correct me if I'm wrong here, a 75 to 80 year old, what looks like a very kind nonno.
A nonno, a definite nonno, an Italian grandfather, definitely.
Right. Elderly
gentleman, yes.
Mm-hmm. I have subtitles on this, so I'm going to read what he says for the video and the audience listening on radio, because I believe it's in Italian. But here's what he says. He says, and I quote, "The pasta shelves are empty. What's happening? There wasn't this much panic when World War II started." And then he walks out of the grocery store saying, "Oh, my God." And if you want, I can do an accent on it, but I don't want to insult anybody.
Every once in a while.
But sometimes, Sid, and in talking to my 82-year-old father today, sometimes you got to talk to the guys that have been around for a little while. Because in youth, you learn. With age, you understand. And if we all don't grab the pasta, then there's enough pasta for everybody.
So now I got to grab toilet paper and pasta.
No, I'm not. That's in Italy.
But I'm saying I love some pasta.
I understand. But actually, what I'm saying is the exact opposite. That if we all kind of walk slowly and together, there won't be a situation where you got to go grab pasta. Because like this guy says, he lived in World War II, I'm guessing, or at least he heard the stories.
That was a thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're saying everyone needs to kind of calm down,
right?
Work with each other.
It helps.
Okay. But I'm still putting pasta down to something I'm picking up this weekend. I'm not going to lie to you.
No, I understand.
I love me some pasta.
Right.
I don't want to miss the pasta. Speaking of miss, let's run the thing.
What we miss.
You're going to have to buy me some time on what we miss because I've lost the sheets that they give me.
Again, for those listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, the Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. Coming up right after us, the Leafs are now only a point up on the Florida Panthers, who last night go into St. Louis, go into the house of the reigning Stanley Cup champions, and pick up two points.
Sands,
thank you, producer Jason Sands, for walking in.
Appreciate it.
You don't really want to be on TV, do you, Sandsy?
No, you kind of
really?
Just leave.
He's wanted in three different provinces. I wouldn't want to be either. The Leafs tonight live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. They can go to 3 points up on Florida. This is going to be a race, basically, for the rest of the season. 13 games to go for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You can listen to it right after us. Tim, are you ready to go?
Got it!
There you go.
Well, you were providing information. You weren't wasting time.
No, I knew that. I was laying it down.
Right.
Still thinking about pasta.
I was still thinking about the
guy.
What's
your favorite pasta?
Make a relax.
What's your favorite pasta?
He literally said make a relax.
He literally said it in Italian.
Right. We used to do a segment called make a relax or on to something. He said make a relax.
I can't live without lasagna, man.
It's lasagna?
Is that technically, I guess it's still technically pasta.
Yeah, it is a form of pasta.
I can't live without lasagna. I'm Garfield. Just without it's a dish.
Whoa,
Seb's piping dish. Up. It's
all right.
It's a pasta dish.
Put it on
dish.
The poll. Hold on. Put it on the poll. Is lasagna pasta or a dish or both?
I got your dish right here, Seb.
Oh. Look at this guy.
I got your pasta.
No, that's the wrong one. I meant to hit this one.
I got your pasta right here.
What? Fusilli?
What's the fusilli?
You said you got it right here. You ever seen the size of Fusili?
Yes, I have. How could I forget?
Colorado Avalanche announced today that Larry Walker will serve as the team's emergency backup goaltender for Sunday night's game against the Golden Hawks. Walker, inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, or will be this summer, will also be honored by the Avs before the game. Growing up in Maple Ridge, BC, you might remember, Walker dreamed of being an NHL goalie. This might be the emergency backup goaltender for the Colorado Avalanche as I leaf through the stories of it, trying to figure it out. But I'm not even going to ask you about that. I'm just going to say, what was your dream job growing up?
First off, even if you did have information on that, I'm not going to believe anything other than Larry Walker is the emergency goalie and would go in if two goalies got hurt for either side. So whether it's ceremonial or not, I have no idea. I'm treating this as real, that Larry Walker is the guy going to make $500 at the end of the night and potentially be a goalie.
I thought I said somewhere the honorary emergency goal thing.
It makes sense.
So I don't know what that means.
It makes sense.
Honorary?
I think you're right, but I don't want to believe it.
Okay. Anyways, you're going to answer the question. What's your dream job growing up?
Dream job, storm chaser.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
I've told you 1,000 times, yeah, man. If I wasn't kicking ass in broadcasting, which I am, I would be a storm chaser. I would go out and where's the storm and chase it. I saw Twister twice on that opening weekend. Did I ever tell you that? It was one of the worst movies ever, but like I was such a tornado geek that I saw it twice. It was bad. Helen Hunt was pretty good. Everyone else was just terrible in that movie. It was a good cast, too.
Just remember cows.
Awful movie. The cow, there was a scene where the cow, they have a cow in between two twisters. It was a great scene. There was a cow in the twister, and Helen Hunt was like, hey, there's a cow. But yeah, it'd be a storm chaser.
You and Mike Trout.
Oh, you know that? He's a big-time weather guy. He's like Mike. Oh, who's the guy from the Weather Network? The guy who does steroids. Mike Cantor. Do you know the guy I'm talking about?
No, I have no
idea. There's a guy on the American.
And I'm sure allegedly it's got to be added to that mix.
Jim Cantor is like pure juicing on the Weather Network down in the States. He's been doing it for years, but he's fantastic at what he does. He's the guy they put in front of every hurricane.
I'm just the co-host here. His name's on the show too. I can't tell him what to say. He says what he wants to say.
But Mike Trout's a big fan of Jim Cantor as well. That's why I'm bringing him up.
Speaking of wars of words. Draymond Green, Charles Barkley, going toe-to-toe. Barkley has fired back. He took the high road early today, and then he went on the Dan Patrick Show later, after the high road, and fired this back.
He's like the guy in the boy band who's the least important member. And he think the crowd is like cheering for him. He doesn't realize he's standing next to Justin Timberlake. Yeah, he's the least famous person in the boy band, and he thinks he's a star.
Oh, wow. So Charles Barkley today.
Who's winning?
Well, Charles Barkley's winning. I thought you were going to ask me which member of which boy band is Draymond Green.
Right.
Because he's clearly Kevin from the Backstreet Boys, the tall guy with the mustache. He's the least important member.
Right.
Right?
Right. I get it. Yeah.
And Posh Spice was the least important member of Spice Girls.
Okay, sure.
Couldn't sing. I'm just saying he was never going to win this, right? Draymond Green was never, ever, ever. The second he opened up this Pandora's box of insults to one of the great players of all time, Charles Barkley, he was never going to win this argument. Draymond Green has been skewered by members of the media, by other NBAers. This has not gone well for Draymond Green. I don't know what he was thinking, but this was going to happen the entire time. Charles Barkley was always going to have the last laugh on this one. Lesson learned, Draymond. Lesson learned.
Is the biggest rip every time he's averaging 8 points and 6 rebounds on a crappy team?
Just got to say that. Triple single?
Yeah.
He's averaging a triple single, yes.
The assists are nice, though. 6.2 assists per game.
It's fine. But
it's not bad.
Don't try and take down Charles Barkley with those numbers this year. You have more sense than that, Draymond. Come on. Give me a break.
Champs League or NBC won't trade Al Michaels.
I think we got the news on the Al Michaels there. They're not going to trade him. Let's do a little, these are the champions. Let Grandes equipe the champs.
Is that what they say? The Grandes equipe?
They say it in a bunch of languages.
Big teams?
Yeah, basically big teams. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it's Les Grandes equipe, which is Spanish. The champions.
I think that's French.
Whatever.
All right, a pair of games today. Leipzig or Leipzig?
Red Bull Leipzig.
Leipzig.
Yeah, yeah.
Beat Tottenham 3-0. They advanced 4-0 on aggregate. Atalanta beat Valencia 4-3, advancing on 8-4 aggregate. What stood out to you besides Slovenians doing work again, by the way?
Shout out Iličić for Atalanta. Tim McAuliffe, a huge Iličić guy.
No, I'm a big Slovenian guy. I don't know how the hell they qualify for all the things they qualify for with a million people. Well, it's like Mississauga, Ontario, qualifying for the World Cup.
Well, when you and I spoke to Andrzej Kopitar of the Kings in Chicago this summer, like or last summer, he was one of the coolest guys we ran into. And you're right, just the country as a sports story
is unbelievable.
It is phenomenal.
In a couple different sports, too. Basketball, soccer, of course.
Honestly, Tim, what stuck out? I'm still getting used to no fans in the seats.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get used to that.
I think
though.
You're right. Unfortunately,
we're all going to have to get used to that.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, that's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow. We will talk to you, and we'll have some of that ceremony from the Pocket Rocket, which should be interesting tonight.
They do it right in Montreal, man. They always do.